Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins. Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with me, A.P. Fuchs. So here we are together again. It's been a week. We're together now, and we're going to do a story time right away. This intro is going to be really, really brief. I don't want to give away the story, but I will say that it is based on a true story in a way. And you'll find out when you listen to the story behind the story segment of the podcast as to how that phrase fits in. But yeah, it's a story where, you know, for me, especially when I started out as a writer, was a good, I would say a good choice in terms of picking up ideas for what to write about, you know, because sometimes when you're starting out in a craft, you kind of get stuck on the creative front in terms of like what to create. So what I did is, again, I don't want to give it away. So yeah, what I did is I took this element and used it as my inspiration behind the story that you're about to hear. And what that inspiration was, well, stay tuned for Story Behind the Story, and you'll find out what that is. But yeah, thanks again for tuning in, and let's not delay, okay? Let's get right into it. It's time for story time. And this one is about a man in the woods. The Man in the Woods. Bernie Calhoun wasn't too upset the night his wife sentenced him to sleep on the couch in the living room of their small home on Maple Tree Drive. It was quite understandable, actually. Besides, Bernie thought, if I caught her moaning in her sleep night after night, I'd probably do the same to her. Oh well, no matter. Can't take much of her own heavy breathing myself anyway. And that was true. It was as if his wife, Elizabeth, made a conscious effort to counter each moan he emitted with an equally loud exhale of her own. The funny thing was, though Bernie was sound asleep when she exhaled so audibly, he was still able to hear her. Bernie set his blanket and pillow down on the first of the three cushions that made up the seat of the couch. There was a hide-a-bed inside, but he was too lazy to pull it out. Besides, if he did, then it would show Elizabeth, when she came down for coffee in the morning, that he was able to make the best out of any situation that confronted him. Tonight, however, he wanted her to feel sorry for him. He would rough it on the couch, without the bed, and when she came down in the morning, she would feel bad she made him sleep on worn cushions with nothing but a thin, knit blanket and a feather pillow. Still, her actions were understandable, but the fact of the matter was, Bernie couldn't help his moaning in his sleep. He wanted to help it, but couldn't. Each morning Elizabeth would tell him he was groaning and muttering something as he slept, and each time he would reply by saying, "Yeah, maybe, but there'd be no reason for it. I slept fine." Or so he would think, because, when he was able to recall them, his dreams the night before had been pleasant ones. He hadn't had any bad dreams for 30 years, but he had plenty before then, and there had been one in particular that had topped them all. Deep down inside, he knew it was that dream that was responsible for all the moaning in his sleep, as if that dream still occurred somewhere underneath the normal dreams he dreamed now. Though not one to give in to any outlandish ideas or any hoodoo, Bernie did believe that something came through into this world the night he dreamt about the man in the woods. Bernie had been 10 years old, the oldest of two sons of John and Delia Calhoun. His brother, Brent, was 3 years younger, placing him at 7 at the time. They were the B brothers to the kids down the street and in the schoolyard. Bernard and Brenton Calhoun to their parents. To each other, they were Berno and Brento. It was often a tradition on weekends for Bernie and Brent to have sleepovers. Not so much in the traditional sense, since they lived under the same roof, but on either Friday or Saturday night, Bernie would drag his bedding up to his brother's room and set up camp on the floor. After lights out, the farting contests would begin, and, after that, the air smelling of a poignant version of that night's dinner, quiet mutterings of dirty words they weren't allowed to say along with giggles to compliment them. Words like poop butt and dinkus seemed all the more funnier with the lights off. Then, after the profanities were exhausted and the boob talk done, the B brothers would call it a night, seldom waking, and if one of them did, the other knew about it by a glass of water splashed in their face when the other came back from the bathroom from a middle-of-the-night pee. But there was that one night that scared Bernie, and it was then he swore never to sleep in his brother's room again. Catch! Brent yelled across the field. He let the baseball rip toward Bernie. You putz! It's higher than it was last time! Bernie yelled back and followed the ball with his eyes as it came down from high in the blue sky like a falling meteorite before landing in his beat-up old baseball mitt. He looked back at Brent. His brother spun in circles in the dirt patch that seemed both out of and in place in the grass before the trees. They were out camping, playing catch before dinner, with Mom and Dad back at camp about 10 minutes away. Bernie hurled the ball at his brother, throwing a little slower than he would to his friends because Brent was younger and couldn't catch the fast ones. Brent soured his face, like he always did, as the ball came toward him. The ball smacked into his glove in a dull thwack when he caught it. Brent stood up proudly, and with the ball still hidden in his glove, wriggled his ball hand above his head as if saying, "Hey, I caught it, and I'm going to throw it back at you, but even higher than the last time." He lowered his arm and added, "Hang on a sec," then bent down to tie his shoe. Bernie watched him, the sun glaring in his eyes from just above the trees. He turned away when the brightness caused a dull ache behind his eyes. When he looked back, Brent was gone. The forest was uncharacteristically dark for during the day. The green around Bernie was that dark green, so dark it looked almost black. The only thing that told him it was still daytime was the light green highlights on some of the leaves from the sunlight streaking in through the holes in the canopy of the treetops high above him. Bernie looked around. He stood no more than 4 feet from the forest's edge, and if he took a couple steps back, he would be able to see into the field where he and Brent had just been playing catch. But he wouldn't be turning around this afternoon. He had to find his brother. And wasn't it just like Brent to go and run off in the middle of the woods he didn't know? He had done the same thing a year ago while at the park near their house. They had been in a field there too, doing what, Bernie couldn't remember, when suddenly his brother was gone, swallowed by a cluster of shrubbery and trees. "Brento?" Bernie called out quietly at first. No answer. "Brento!" he called out again, this time louder. Still nothing. The leaves rustled in the breeze. "Brento!" His imagination immediately stepped in, and he could almost hear Brent calling back to him. But Bernie knew the difference between his imagination and real life. And this was real life. Brent hadn't responded. He stepped further into the dense woods, his footfalls slow at first, but quickly increasing from the panic of knowing his brother could be lost. "Stupid Brento," Bernie muttered. He thought briefly about running back out of the woods to tell his parents Brent might have gone on himself lost, but he knew that if he did, his father would no doubt scold him for losing track of his brother and leaving him all alone in the forest. Dinkus. The thickness of the brush eased up a little, and Bernie soon found himself in a sparsely vegetated clearing inside the woods. He would have thought it would make a cool fort, was he not so worried for his brother. Off to his right, he heard a branch snap, and he immediately spun in that direction. "Brento?" he said, his voice catching in his throat. "Is that you?" The leaves rustled in the wind again, his only answer. Bernie trudged toward where he heard the branch snap. He silently swore to himself that when he found his brother, he would noogie the heck out of him. The twigs and kindling crunched under his sneakers. He came up to some taller shrubbery and trudged through that too. He parted the branches, some of them slapping back at him. One hit him in the eye. "Ow," he said, mostly to himself, but secretly hoping Brent was nearby and could hear that he hurt himself trying to find him. More thin branches, more crunching of shrubbery, more light and dark green. The patch of bushes came to an end, and now there was only tree after tree after tree. Bernie looked around, trying to get his bearings. Aside from the bushes behind him, everything else looked the same. This scared him. He had always been good at finding his way around places he was a stranger to, but they had been malls, neighborhood streets. This was his first forest, and he feared he might be lost. "Great," he said. "I tell you, Brento, if I get lost because of you, I'm going to feed you to your own cojones." He kept walking, the trees around him seeming to multiply like rabbits. 5 minutes later, he stopped and looked around again. This time, he knew he had done it. Everything looked the same, and what was worse, he couldn't see that patch of bush he cleared a few minutes ago. His path hadn't been straight. He had to avoid trees, roots, and other small shrubbery. He was lost. Realizing you're lost comes in stages. At first, the, oh crap, I'm lost, sensation hits you in the chest with a sharp and thick woof. Then, that's followed with the rapid beating of your heart pulsing. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? You think of how you got to be lost in the fast replay of everything that transpired up until the present. Then you look at your surroundings once more and re-acknowledge that you're clueless as to your location. Finally, you analyze your options. And this is what Bernie did. He analyzed his options of where his brother could be. Except he couldn't arrive at any conclusions. His idiot brother had run into the woods, perhaps thinking a game of hide-and-seek would be fun, then not realizing that foreign woods was a bad place to do it in. Brento! Bernie called. No one answered. The air stilled, the rustling of the leaves quieted, the streaks of sun poking through the canopy of the forest ceiling muted. That's when Bernie saw him. That's when he saw the man in the woods. The man, standing slightly hunched behind a thin veil of leaves and branches, was of average height and average weight. If Bernie were interested in specifics, he would have guessed around 5.5 feet tall, 165 to 170 pounds. The man's face was round, not fat round, but round like a baby's. He was bald too, and there were shallow indents in his skull, making his head look more skeleton-like than normal. He wore a long black coat, and his eyes had no pupils or irises, at least none that Bernie could see. Was the man blind? Maybe. But then why did it seem like he was looking right at him? Bernie, his knees shaking, wanted to call out to the man, but he didn't, and Bernie knew something right then. He knew if this wasn't a dream, he wouldn't have known that the man knew where Brent was. There was an awkward exchange of glances. The man knew Bernie knew that he knew where Brent was. Bernie knew the man knew that the man knew where Brent was. And this cycle continued, the cycle of them knowing that the other knew, until finally, after much, he knew that he knew that he knews. The man in the woods winked at Bernie, then disappeared behind the leaves. Bernie stepped forward slowly and approached the branches and leaves where the man had just been. He was sure, just as he stepped up to the branches, the man was hiding somewhere in the leaves, and at any moment he would jump out and strangle him. But the man didn't, and he was safe. Except Bernie knew his brother wasn't. Somewhere, out there ahead of him, lost in the woods, Brent was being held captive by the man. Bernie could sense it, almost as evidently as if someone had told him so. He didn't call out his brother's name, despite his inclination to do just that. Instead, he walked on, carefully, and with each patch of leaves and branches he passed, grew all the more comfortable the man wouldn't be jumping out from behind any of them, because, simply, the man hadn't so far. There was another clearing ahead of him, this one not nearly as big as the one he had first encountered when coming into the woods, but it was big enough to hold a small house with a round roof. The man lives here, Bernie knew, and Brento's here too. The house was something out of a storybook. Its walls were white, its roof a light brown with smooth shingles that looked to be more impressed on the structure rather than laid on it. There was a door, its edges round, with a window on each side, about head height, their edges round as well. What was off about the house were two things. No smoke came from the chimney. Bernie thought this strange simply because if someone lived in a house, like in all storybooks, smoke came from the chimney. That's just how it was. And no path led to the two steps that went up to the front door. All storybook houses had a path leading up to them. That's just the way things were. Bernie approached the house, images of Brent filling his mind. He could almost see his brother inside the house, standing there in the center of the room, watching the man wait for their visitor to arrive. The man would pace back and forth, occasionally grumbling something about how Bernie was taking so long in getting there, and Brent, too scared to move, could only nod at the man, his bizarre obligation to agree with the man taking him over completely. A shudder raced up and down Bernie's spine, a knot formed in his stomach. He started toward the house, his steps shaky. With each footfall, though he consciously knew he should be getting closer. The house seemed to be distancing itself from him, apprehension of what might come making his trek up the house longer and longer. The two windows at the front of the house were like eyes staring at him. The door, a long, drooping nose, the two rows of steps, the teeth in a haunting smile. Step, step, step. The house was 3 footfalls closer, but seeming to move 2 footfalls back. Step, step, step. 3 footfalls nearer, 2 footfalls further. Step, step. 2 paces, then 1 away. Step, snap! The sound echoed in his legs. Bernie yelped in surprise. A branch had broken in half beneath his right foot. He looked down, shook his head. His wobbling legs continued forward again. Closer came the house. Further away the house moved. After what felt like forever, Bernie was only 2 paces away from the steps to the door. The house was menacing this close, its size seeming to have doubled in just a few short paces. There was dead silence from behind the door, no sign of anything living inside. Bernie tried to call out Brento's name, but only a dry, pinching rasp rose from his throat. He moved closer to the house. He raised his foot above the first step. It landed on the concrete foothold with a thwack, as if his shoe had slapped a stone instead of merely stepped on it. Bernie stepped onto the stair, paused, and found balance in his rubbery legs before stepping up to the next. He was face to face with the door. The sharp smell of pine filled his nostrils. There was that blasted silence within the home. Bernie knocked, the sound hollow, the door that had just seemed so large and thick suddenly seeming so thin and weak. There was no answer, as expected. Why would there be? Bernie knew who lived behind the door. The man wouldn't be inviting him inside. The man would want Bernie to walk in. He knocked again, just to be sure. Same hollow sound. Same silence responding. The door handle was a shiny golden knob, and Bernie could see his reflection in it. He reached for it, grabbed it, its cool surface sending a shrill up his arm. He ignored it and turned the knob, the door unlatching itself effortlessly. He pushed and the door swung open. What he saw took his breath away. But not in that good way, like how Mary had taken his breath away when she entered his 4th grade classroom after she moved here from Ontario at the beginning of the school year. What Bernie saw held his chest in an iron grip, his lungs refusing to inhale the thick, foul air of the house. The interior was a simple room, rounded at the corners, with a straw bed over to one side. The walls, lower down, were covered with animal heads. Deer, mostly, with a couple of dog and fox heads, rabbits, even a squirrel's. Higher up on the wall, however, human heads were mounted on dark oak plaques, like prize trophies, which, Bernie supposed, was what these heads were to the man. The heads were of all kinds, white people, black people, Indigenous people, males, females, both young and old, even a baby's head, as if a match to the oddball squirrel head that lower down. Inexplicably drawn to them, Bernie studied the faces of each dead person, his mouth agape at the slack-jawed mouths of their heads, their open eyes, the whites in them faded to an awful gray. Their cheeks were caved in slightly, their lips pallid and thin. Their hair sat unnaturally, as if the man had taken the time to style and comb each mop atop all of them. The baby didn't have any hair, Bernie noticed. Upon further inspection, he realized his assessment of the hair on the top of the heads wasn't entirely accurate. On the tops of each of them, the hair was crusty, tainted a deep red, almost a maroon, the tops of the head a mess of skin, hair, and bone, as if something had sanded away the flesh on top. Bernie shuddered at the sight. A semi-transparent beige tarp stretched from the middle of the room to the wall to the right. The silhouette of the man danced behind it, his feet hopping from one to the other to a tune only he could hear. He danced around a table with a lump in the middle of it, the sound of scraping filling the silence of the cabin. Bernie knew what that lump was, though he wouldn't acknowledge it. How could he? The very thought of it made him cringe. He took a step closer, the man starting to whistle now. The raspy, scraping sound continued, droning in and out. Zh, zh, over and over. The man held a large file, rubbing it back and forth along the lump, quickly in some places, slower in others. Bernie paused to look again, his breath noticeably getting louder. He swallowed hard, the wad of spit in his mouth going down his throat like a pebble into his stomach. The man paused suddenly in his work, his head cocked, as if hearing something. Bernie froze. The man cocked his head a little further to the left, listening. Once it was determined all was at peace, he resumed his filing. Bernie, with legs like noodles and a rock in his stomach, approached the beige tarp. The fabric was inches from his nose. The man kept working furtively on whatever project it was that occupied the table. However, Bernie knew what that project was. Again, he just wouldn't acknowledge it. Just then, spittle caught in the back of his throat, and he involuntarily coughed to clear it. The hacking sound was louder than it should have been in the silent cabin, the rough scraping inside his throat from the cough feeling a lot harsher as well. The man stopped, and though still concealed by the tarp, Bernie could swear he saw a grin spread across the man's face. The man set the file down, but Bernie could still hear, still feel, that awful scraping sound. Bernie closed his eyes as he shuddered, the cold tingle taking him fully, the hairs on his skin standing on end. When he opened his eyes, he saw the man wasn't behind the tarp anymore. Afraid to move, but compelled to do so anyway, Bernie lifted his right hand, reached across himself, and grabbed the corner of the beige tarp on his left. He squeezed the fabric into a bunch, his arm daring to pull it back. He had to see what that lump was. Had to make sure it wasn't, or was, what he thought it was. He held the edge of the tarp tight, the material already becoming damp with the sweat from inside his palm. He squeezed his eyes shut. He pulled the tarp back. He didn't open his eyes. The scraping went on, but more to the right and behind him. Bernie opened his eyes. His brother's head sat on a wooden workbench, held in place by a small vise built into the table's top center. Brento's eyes were open, glazed over, and lifeless. Brento looked at his brother, his gaze filled with longing, asking, begging, for Bernie to take him home safe and sound to their parents. But Brent was dead, Bernie knew, and there was nothing he could do to save him. From off behind Bernie. "Why weren't you there, Berno?" Brent's eyes pleaded. Bernie didn't have an answer. This was already too much. The top of his brother's head was bald, the hair having been rubbed away by the file in his scalping. Wet and messy patches of hair smeared in blood was all that was left of Brent's scalp. That was what the scraping sound had been. The man had been preparing Brent to be a part of his collection of heads on the wall. Brento. A part of Bernie was glad he found his brother. He was glad he could see his brother one last time before the man came up behind Bernie, his calloused hands spinning him around. Bernie looked up at the man through watery vision. The man's head was very round, but very square all the same. It was as if it had been carved from a cube of ice, the edges softened and rounded to take on a more human-like appearance. His eyes were big as they come, Bernie thought, the blank whites of his eyes now replaced with irises bluer than the ocean on the most beautiful of days. His skin was beige like the tarp in the room, however slightly more tanned. His skin was rough with large pores. He had on a long, deep, black smock that swallowed the light and was rather clean and neat in appearance against the more rough and tumble atmosphere of the small cabin. "You killed my brother," Bernie said. "You killed Brento." The man only smiled a kind smile, as if killing Brent had been the right thing to do. Bernie took notice of the man's extraordinarily crooked teeth, black gaps having taken the place of some of them. A welt of heated loathing brewed up inside him. "I hate you," he screamed, and started pounding his small fists against the man. The man, not retaliating, only took Bernie into his arms, holding him like a father would a son. Bernie sobbed and sobbed, the hurtful knowledge of his brother's death rampaging through him. His skin rubbed against the rough material of the man's cloak, making near the same sound as the scraping he'd heard earlier. Almost, but not quite. The man smelled like warm orange juice. Zh, zh, zh. The man pushed Bernie away so he could look at him. Bernie kept crying. Brent's head looked on. "Why did you kill Brento?" Bernie asked, his voice thick with tears. The man didn't reply. He only stared at Bernie. "Why did you..." Bernie began, but couldn't finish. "Why did you? Why did you? Why did you have to run off, Brento? Why did you? Why did you? Why did you have to run off?" There were no answers that night. The man didn't have to give any to Bernie. He just simply did what he knew how to do. And Bernie, poor Bernie. His head, too, sat on a shelf along with his brother's, their eyes peering out into the rest of the musty cabin. What drove Bernie nuts, though, wasn't that he was forced to stare at the same interior day in and day out. No, sir, it was the draft. The draft that cooled the worn-away bald spot on the top of his head. And the tickling. There was the tickling of the matted strands of hair that hung just above his eyes, just touching their tops, that drove him crazy. He couldn't speak. His voice box was gone. He wanted to ask Brent if he was being tickled too, and if he felt that draft all the time, or if the torment was only his. That night, out here in the real world, 10-year-old Bernie woke up with a start, his body jerking itself free from the quilts that covered him. He was in Brent's room, on the floor, with Brent fast asleep in his bed. It was a bad dream. That's all. It was over. It was... A voice echoed from the basement of the house, two floors below Brent's room. "See you tomorrow night," it said. Bernie's wife was sleeping upstairs. Bernie knew that she was because he heard her breathing. That blasted breathing. He pulled the knit blanket up close under his chin and closed his eyes again. Thinking about the man in the woods had exhausted him. Long ago, the man had warned him he would see Bernie tomorrow night. And he did. There had been many tomorrows since that first night, and on each of them, the man had visited Bernie. Bernie couldn't prove this, but he knew it was true. There were nightmares beneath the pleasant dreams, nightmares about the man, but when recalling his dreams for the night before, he could only remember happy ones, but with a darker edge. Maybe Brent had these same strange good-bad dreams too, but Bernie didn't know if Brent knew anything about the man, as he didn't have the heart to ask his brother if he was having the same recurring dream. How could Brent be having those dreams anyway? Brent was only in the dream. He hadn't dreamt it. But the man came back, just like he said he would. Bernie's wife was breathing more quickly now. Bernie opened his eyes. The sound of her breathing eased, but not completely. He closed his eyes again. The breathing resumed. Zh, zh, zh. He dreamed of being on the shelf, dreamed of the draft that would constantly pester the top of his head. Sitting on the shelf, his eyes staring out into the cabin, his brother beside him, Bernie thought maybe this was how the man got inside his head in the first place. Through the filing down of skin and bone and hair. Through the filing down of all the heads in his prized collection, and then somehow all the people in the room, even the animals, now dreamed of the man and his cabin all the time. But if that was true, that would mean that maybe his brother did dream of the man. Maybe. Bernie awoke again. His wife's breathing eased once more. He recalled his realization in the dream. If Brent dreamed of the man, maybe he could talk to his brother about it. Maybe together they can put to bed a nightmare that started over 30 years ago. Maybe. His heart sped up with hope. This was a good thing. Too excited to sleep, Bernie threw the blanket back, sat up on the couch, stretched, and stood. He went upstairs. As he approached the door to the master bedroom, he half expected to hear his wife's breathing. But the bedroom door was closed. Bernie paused just outside the door, his hand wanting to embrace the knob and enter. Elizabeth was sleeping soundly. It didn't add up. All those years of marriage, all those nights of laying awake, his eyes closed, listening to his wife's labored breathing. All the times he told her she breathed loudly in her sleep and she said that she didn't. All those mornings of her complaining of his moaning in his sleep, his retaliating by saying she breathed too loud. All those... Then it hit him. His mind, perhaps because he was focusing on the subject, replayed that breathing. Zzz, zzz, zzz. It was then Bernie realized what he had taken back from with him from the woods. It was so clear the shock of it sent his heart racing. He knew his knowing would be the death of him. Elizabeth awoke the following morning, sad and slightly upset at herself for making her husband sleep on the couch in the living room. She knew she had been hard on him, but she couldn't take any more of that moaning in his sleep. But there was more to it than that, more to the moaning that she hadn't told him. There was also the breathing, the raspy breathing that sounded as if something was being sanded and filed down. That awful zzz, zzz, zzz sound that kept her awake most nights. But he was her husband, and marriage was about putting up with the other's more annoying habits. If Bernie breathed loud in his sleep, she had to accept that. She got out of bed and, yawning, made for the bedroom door, almost tasting her morning coffee. When she opened the door, her breath caught in her throat. Her hand slid off the doorknob. No one needed to confirm for her what she saw. She knew. Bernie was dead. He lay just outside the bedroom door. All right, everybody, welcome to the story behind the story. So, where did this story come from, right? It's a true story in the context of course, the events in the story, people dying and stuff didn't really happen. But the dream, that did in fact occur. My brother and I did have those sort of sleepovers where we'd once in a while would, go up to the other guy's room or go down to Taylor's room because I was in the basement and have a sleepover. One would be on the floor, one would be on the bed. And it was just something fun to do on weekends. No big deal. And of course, the fart jokes and the boob talk and, boy stuff, right? So yeah, but anyway, there was this one night I remember very distinctly where my brother was sleeping on his bed. I was on the floor with my head near the bedroom door. And I had this horrible dream about the man in the woods. From what I recall at this like current moment in time, I remember very specifically, seeing him as described in the book, in the story. I remember seeing the inside of that cabin. I remember seeing the heads on the walls. I remember him working on something in some sort of workshop. And he was using like, really rustic, old school, rusty, dirty, power tools, right? And they're making all sorts of, old school sounds, like nothing like our modern, it's called modern wood making or wood crafting technology does. It's not quite like that. It's like loud and annoying. So anyway, I remember all that stuff. And then the thing is, and then it's the man, I can't remember 100% what happened in the dream in terms of him coming after me. But as it is, when you're a kid, when you have a night dream, a nightmare, and you do see the villain, you know you're in big trouble, right? So I remember suddenly waking up terrified, utterly terrified of what I saw. And then I'm not kidding, like literally within 2 seconds after waking, shouting from my basement was his voice, "See you tomorrow night." And hearing that in the real world scared the crap out of me, like utter terror. Like I was convinced that somehow this guy was in the basement. And because my brother's bedroom was across the hall from my parents, I called for my dad. I mean, I was probably 8 or 9 years old, maybe. And yeah, so I called for my dad. And, of course, dad being a good dad comes out. Like, what's wrong, son? I told him about the dream, but more specifically, I told him what I heard. And he paused and he kind of just looked at me for a second as if he was thinking. And then he said, there's things known as waking dreams, right? Where we... and it's true, like there's sometimes it occurs where you kind of have a waking dream, and And what he was suggesting was that even though I was awake, like in the real world, at the time I heard the voice, a part of me was still asleep, and that's where that came from. But I pleaded with him. I remember just pleading with my dad. I said, "Dad, look, I heard this voice, this guy, like he's in the basement. I'm not kidding. Like, this is serious stuff. What are we gonna do?" So my dad, you know, he's got he's got his flaws, but you know, he's got some very good characteristics and some good traits in terms of being a father. And so what he did is he went down two floors, all the way down to the basement, and he checked for me where I told him this man was. You know, an act of love kind of thing, right? He did it to humor me, obviously, but you know, at the time, being a kid, dad checking this out, that was serious. And he came back up and he assured me, nobody's down there, everything's fine, all's in the clear, you can go back to sleep. And so, yeah, so it's this story, The Man in the Woods, was based on that nightmare. Because that nightmare is like, out of all the nightmares we have throughout our life, right, we forget some, but we remember certain ones. And that was the case. I wanted to turn this nightmare into a story. So I just kind of expanded it a little bit in terms of like taking that core concept of the man in the woods and what he does, and then just giving a story around it just to build up to that moment. So that was the purpose of the, I guess you could call it, just the surrounding narrative regarding the story itself. It was just, yeah, taking a true dream, put a story around it, and then share it with you, dear reader. So that's the story behind the story. And it's, yeah, it was based on a dream. And dreams can make great stories if they're remembered correctly and you do your best, right? And sometimes they're just a good jumping off point from an inspiration point of view. And then you can just take it wherever you want from there. Anyway, here we go. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it. We're going to see you next week with another story. But in the meantime, be sure to like and subscribe, comment. Okay, we need to keep the show going. And story time coming up 7 days. Thanks for sticking around for after the credits, and this time we're gonna do something dumb. Okay, well, one could argue, yeah, we've always done something dumb, but no, but the real thing is, so for those listening who may not know where I'm from Canada. I live in Winnipeg, which means if you look on a map, I'm like literally my city is like smack dab in the middle of North America. It's like a pinpoint bang right in the middle. But anyway, here's something about Canada. This is absolutely obscene and ridiculous, right? But it's fun. All right. So Canada's national animal. Okay, this is our animal that we chose to be our national representative on the world stage in terms of our animal portrayal, right? The Americans, right? They got the eagle. Something cool, right? Canada, this is what we did. We chose the beaver. Yes, we chose the beaver. Sure, they could get up to 60 pounds and over 3 feet long and basically sleep most of the time and build some dams. But yeah, we chose a beaver. We can start making jokes, if you like, about why we chose the beaver. I mean, we do have a city called Regina. But anyway, yeah, so for those of you not from Canada listening to this, you want to get on with us? Come fight our beaver. All right. Talk to you later. Have a good week.